know in times like this, when we see suicide in a scope where many people have access to the information and are left to certain sites like social media in order to make sense of it, it's always a really sensitive time, because suicide is one of those things that impacts people who are still alive in a very complex way as it relates to grief, anxiety, etc. And a lot of us often see suicide as something like it elicits a whole variety of emotion in people. Sometimes people get angry when they read about it. Sometimes people get sad. Sometimes people are disappointed or confused or whatnot. And that's because it's confusing. A lot of us really don't know what to do. So the first thing I want to say is that whether it's you or somebody you know, there are hotlines available, and I want to share a little bit my experience of that and let all of you know what happens if you call that hotline, because I think there's a lot of misconceptions about that. A lot of people seem to think that if, say, a streamer or if somebody else says something like you should call a hotline, that they're just passing somebody off to something that they're just going to disappear in the ether. And I'm here to tell you that that's not true. The National Suicide Prevention Hotline is not just this pit of despair or some abyss that people don't find help with. It's actually a service that is set up nationally that has trained volunteers who answer the phone, who are trained on how to handle crisis management and how to talk to a person who is struggling with suicidal ideation. The reason that the hotline exists is in large part because most of us, expectedly so, have no idea what to do if a friend comes to you or a family member or somebody you know comes to you and says, hey, I've been thinking about ending my life. I'm thinking about killing myself. So the hotline is there so that that person can talk to somebody who knows exactly what to do when a person is having those types of thoughts. And so before I talk about what you specifically can do, I want to talk a little bit about what the hotline is. So it's a 24-hour hotline. Again, you're going to talk to a trained volunteer. The National Suicide Prevention Hotline does not have a national hub. It's not like you call that number and it goes to some like corporate space. What it does is it reroutes the line to the nearest crisis center. So when I was at Purdue, I worked at a crisis center in Lafayette, Indiana. We fielded phone calls from a huge area of Indiana, and the National Suicide Prevention Hotline would reroute automatically to that number, and I would be the one who would answer the phone. If you called on my shift, I worked overnight shifts, so I would work midnight to 8 a.m. Your call would route to that, and I would be the one that would answer. Okay, so it's a huge network of crisis lines. So when you call, the way that a person is going to answer is going to be very neutral. It's going to just say something like, hello, crisis center, or National Suicide Prevention Hotline. And it's going to be very unassuming. And what that's designed to do is to allow a person to start talking about what's going on to them in a way that with them in a way that's more inviting, and is not like, they're not going to answer the phone and say like, hi, are you about to kill yourself? They're also not going to immediately call the police just because you called the National Suicide Prevention Hotline. And I want to be very clear about this, because one of the things that stops people from calling the hotline is they're afraid that they're going to have the cops call them on them immediately. And that is not the case. That is only done in extreme circumstances through a thorough assessment by the hotline operator. Okay. But that the people that are on the phone are trained on how to work you through a conversation if you're struggling with suicidal ideation, to help you get help or to find you the help you need, or to just help you process for however long you need to. I had suicide calls come to me that were anywhere from 15 minutes long to 4.5 hours long. And they will talk to you for however long they need to in order to help you through whatever was going on for you. They're not therapists, but they are like they're trained to handle a crisis. So they might help you get in touch with your therapist. They might help you know what kind of resources are available to you. They may also just, they may be the listening ear that you need in order to kind of help you navigate that space. Okay. So I just wanted to share a little bit about that. It's 24 hours a day. Do not be afraid to call. You do not have to be in dire straits to call the suicide hotline. You could have fleeting ideation, meaning like you might have a passive thought that comes through your head that's like, man, I wonder what it would be like to die. And if that's distressing enough to you, call the hotline. Okay, please call the hotline. Because you don't have to, a lot of people think too, like, oh, other people have it worse. If I call the hotline, I'm blocking somebody who needs it more than I do. And that's not true either, okay? If it goes to a hotline like the one that I worked at, it may be that we have to triage a bit, where if I was the only person that was in the, like on the lines on that overnight shift, I might have to juggle calls, which I'm trained to do and had to do, okay? Or you're gonna be routed, if you're in more of like a bigger metropolitan area, you're gonna have multiple people who are available and they will answer your calls. So like, and they're not gonna sit there and go, hey, no, this is like, this is stupid, this is not whatever, so I'm gonna hang you up because I have somebody over here who's more important than you. That's not gonna happen. It really isn't, okay? So I really wanna be clear about that. Please call the hotline. Encourage somebody to call the hotline if you see them having a hard time, and tell them everything I just told you, okay? That they are trained to listen to you. They're not going to judge you. They're not going to call the police right away. They're going to move you through a conversation in a way that's better than probably any of your friends is going to be able to, unless, like me, they've worked on the hotline before. All right, so that's just a little bit about the suicide hotline. I'll let you guys ask me questions throughout the night about what my experience was like there, but I want to move for a second into what can you do. One of the things that people tend to do when they see suicide happen is, and I mean this, how do I want to say this? This is going to sound harsher than I mean it to. Because it's a form of complex grief, people will tend to make it about themselves. What they could have done, what more they should have listened to or seen, or whatever. At the end of the day, when an adult decides to end their life, it is their responsibility. Okay? Now, I don't mean that to blame necessarily the person who ended their life, but it is ultimately their responsibility. It is not the responsibility of anybody else. Do people create horrible circumstances that push people to feel more like that's their option? Certainly, but ultimately the act itself is the responsibility of the party involved, assuming that they're an adult and assuming they have their full faculties. Okay, now I'm going to put that aside for a second and say this. Usually what happens when people talk about suicide or they try to express to their friends that they're experiencing suicidal ideation is they are met with resistance. They're often met with friends who say something to them like, no, you don't want to do that. Or their friends get anxious, or like, you know, if a person comes to you and says, I want to end my life, most of us, because we don't know what to do, we freak out. We get anxious and no, you don't want to do that. All of a sudden we feel like we're responsible for keeping that person alive in the moment. And that actually stops a conversation from happening. Now, it's one thing if having that conversation is something that just completely emotionally dysregulates you, in which case, yes, set some boundaries, give the hotline number, call 911. Okay. But if that isn't the case for you, and a person comes to you and they share that they've been thinking about ending their life, first of all, it's an incredibly vulnerable thing to do, like ridiculously vulnerable. So listening to them is already going to be a big deal, all right? You don't have to fix anything. Listening. Hearing why a person is experiencing that ideation and asking questions about it is one of the very best things you can do. You're already doing them a huge solid by being there for them, because proximity to another human being, whether through online or whether in person, is actually the number one mitigator of suicide, because suicide happens in isolation, okay? But if a person is talking to you about it, listen, ask them, why do you want to die? What's been going on? And don't try to fix it. Don't try to jump in and say, oh, you don't want to do this. Oh, please, you know, please don't. And make your anxiety theirs to bear. Because if a person's already thinking about killing themselves, they're already probably feeling anxious and hopeless enough and probably are worried about the impact it's going to have on you. Right. So hearing that person's just saying, okay, like, tell me what's going on. I'm here for you. Why is it that you want to die? Instead of jumping to, no, hold on. You have so many things to live for. It's a very invalidating thing to say to somebody who is experiencing the level of hopelessness that has led them to the space that they are wanting to end their life. Which brings me to another point, which is that suicide is often a last-ditch effort. Not always. It's often a last-ditch attempt to try to mitigate a sense of helplessness. It's seen as kind of like the final thing that will resolve my pain. When I would listen to people talk on the hotline every night, they were in immense amounts of emotional pain. And every single call, except for the ones that would maybe like hang up on me, pretty much without fail, every single call, when you would listen to the person who, when you would listen to them talk about why they wanted to die, hear what they have to say, listen to the sense of helplessness that was sitting behind that, it would always end, it would always have a question in there where I would say, if we could figure out something else to do that might work toward diminishing some of the helplessness and hopelessness you feel, we could find something else besides ending your life, would you be open to that? 100% of the time, the answer to that would be yes. Assuming that I listened enough. Okay, and what you're looking for in that case is what's called ambivalence. Right? So it was always about, I don't know what else to do. I feel like I've tried everything else. Right? So when a person is talking about wanting to end their life, they're often feeling helpless, like they don't know what else to do. And it's not your job to come up with other things if you're a friend, okay? It's your job to listen to it and say, hey, you know, maybe you might ask the question, if we could find something else that might help minimize some of this helplessness you're feeling, would you be open to that? Would you be open to me helping you do that? Would you be open to talking to somebody on a hotline or talking to a therapist about that? Because lots of people find alternative things besides killing themselves to mitigate their sense of helplessness. Okay. So I can't stress enough that when you see somebody having a hard time and talking about wanting to end their life, please listen to them. Don't judge them. Don't sit there in your own bullshit and try to make them feel like crap for the fact that they've just told you that. It is an honor to have the ability to hear that's what somebody's going through and work with them. Listen to them and be there for them in proximity or otherwise, emotionally or physically, and help them find the resources they need, whether it's the hotline or whether it's going to the emergency room or 911. I mean, ultimately, like, we have a disclaimer in chat, which I'm going to show you guys. You guys have been seeing it here, which is this. Okay. That is a good standard response to have in your own personal life, if you see that, assuming you need to set some boundaries. But listen to your friends if they happen to talk about it. As far as like larger celebrities or whatnot expressing ideation, there's only so much you can do. They have their circles that need to listen to them as well. Is it sad when people end their lives? Yes. Is it something that is selfish? No. A lot of people like to say that suicide is selfish. I just want to let you guys know that, like, that's not a cool thing to say here, because often suicide is seen as a selfless act by the person who attempts it, that they're doing everybody else a favor. Not only are they sparing themselves of the despair and of the helplessness, they're sparing everybody else from the burden that they perceive themselves to be. And so that's kind of the last thing I want to say is, make sure that if a person comes to you and is talking about that, that they know that they are not a burden to you. That they're not, and that their pain is not burdensome. That it's okay, that their experience matters. And that you may want to help them find help, but that what they're experiencing is okay. It is, by the way, incredibly common, dare I say normal, to experience suicidal ideation, whether fleeting or not. I consider myself to be a perfectly healthy human being. I work in the mental health field. There have been times in my life where you even have that small little thought that comes in your head that says, like, man, what would it be like if I ended my life? I wonder what would happen. That's totally normal. Okay? Doesn't mean I'm going to go act on it. Sure, it's a distressing, intrusive thought. And if you ever have intrusive thoughts related to that, I do have a video on YouTube about intrusive thoughts I encourage you to watch because they can be distressing. But we all have those types of thoughts that come in every once in a while, and they're often more curiosity-based. Okay? But it's hard. It's hard to watch. Seeing suicide represented in the media often can stir up suicidal ideation and thoughts in all of us, in people who are consuming that information. And just know that that's normal. And if you need help, please call the hotline. Hang out in servers and communities like this. I will always be here, and this community will always be here to listen to what you have to say. I have been absolutely amazed at the amount of support that this community has given to others on Discord or otherwise, and corners of the internet. Like, when I break out and say to you guys constantly that I appreciate you all being here, I mean also that I appreciate so much what you do for each other and for creating communities like this, because communities like this, I think, are super important in times like this. So there's not a lot you guys can do, because you're not mental health professionals, and it's important to understand that. Okay, there's a reason that these things, why we have hotlines, there's a reason why we have therapists, and it's not unempathic to suggest to a person that they ought to talk to a professional. It's part of why I even do this channel, because I want to make this shit seem more approachable. I want to make this mental health and attending your mental health and therapy more ubiquitous with living life, instead of it being this thing that's shoved off in the corner somewhere where you're somehow demonized or you're this horrible person because you have to go do this. You have to go talk to a professional about what's going on. There is help out there, man. There really is. And there are people who care. I give a shit. I don't give a shit about my clients because I'm paid by them. I didn't give a shit about the people who called the crisis line because I wasn't even paid to do that. I volunteered to do that because I cared about the people who called in. And there are a bunch more people like me. That's not for me to toot my own horn. It's just for me to explain to you guys that, like, this idea that people out there only do this because they have some kind of agenda beyond I want to help and I want to do the best I can to be trained how to help in a crisis situation is, quite frankly, bullshit. Okay, we're there because we want to help. So I'm going to answer a few questions that I saw in there, and we'll chat just a little bit, and then we'll kind of, like, do a smoothish sort of transition to continuing to have this conversation while we play. But somebody asked, what effects did working on the suicide hotline have? Did I get depressed because of the job? It had a great, thanks for your patience, Golden King. It was a wonderful experience for me. Were there times where I was, like, anxious to go in because I knew I was, because you never knew it was going to come through the phone line? Yes. Like, I will say that. There was a lot of anticipatory anxiety with that. I would be sitting there and I'd be like, I don't know what I'm going to get. Because you don't. There were nights where I got no calls. There were nights where I had 16 calls. But the effect that it had on me in the long run is I have a far deeper appreciation for how much pain human beings can actually endure and do endure on a daily basis. There was some sense of gratification on my part of being able to be there for people who needed the help and were in despair. But honestly, working on the hotline had a very positive impact on me. I did not get depressed because of the job. In fact, it had quite the opposite effect on me. It was very fulfilling. I would leave at 8 a.m. in the morning to go home and, you know, sleep for a couple hours before class. And I would sleep soundly, even if I had a really intense night. Because I was trained on how to deal with it. It wasn't like it was just random ass sophomore, junior, senior me answering a call with people. Like, I had a structured way of being able to have those conversations and was prepared for that. The training does a really good job weeding people out who can't handle that. And that's the other thing I really want to mention is, like, people get weeded out of working on the hotline. It's not like anybody volunteers and they're automatically on the line. The training is super intense. And you have to pass it. And we cut lots of people. I was a trainer. We cut a ton of people who couldn't hack it. They couldn't do the role plays. And they just didn't have it in them to be able to do the calls, and it was nothing personal to them. It was out of protection for people that called the hotline. This is all the shit that nobody ever talks about with the hotline, which really bums me out. That's a soapbox for a different day. Would I ever volunteer for a hotline again? Yes, I would. I don't right now because obviously, like, I'm a therapist, so I'm working with a lot of mental health throughout the week. There are times in my 8 years as a therapist where I've had suicidal ideation on my caseload. But I think if I was in a position where, like, I had the extra time, yes, I would do it. It was a very fulfilling experience. How do you set effective boundaries if people come to you with these ideations? I think it's important to state the limitations of your ability to help, but always express your appreciation for the fact that the person was willing to talk to you about it, right? So if a person comes to you and is talking about it, say, hey, I'm really honored that you feel comfortable enough talking to me about this, and I want to validate for you that this is going on, and that really sucks, and I'm here for you in the ways that I can be. I do want to let you know that, like, I feel sort of limited in my ability to assist other than to be here and listen. And so, like, I really do want to help you guys. I really do want to help you. But that may be me helping you talk to somebody who is more qualified to talk to you about this. And then Mia sharing some of these things that I'm talking about today. Okay, like, I know it's scary to call a hotline. You don't know the person on the other end, but they're trained. They're weeded out. They know how to handle this. And I'll either sit with you, I'll give you the number, I'll be there for you when you get off the phone with them. Whatever you need. But it is important to express your limitations. If you're too overwhelmed, you say, like, I'm going to make this worse for you if I talk to you about it because I'm already struggling with some of my own stuff. But who else do you think you could talk to? At least help them game plan. Who else do you think you could talk to? And if all else feels like, and if you can't, like, at all else fails, like, go to the emergency room or call 911. They'll know how to handle it too. But it's hard, but, like, you don't want to put a position, I do want to emphasize this, you don't want to put a person who's experiencing suicidal ideation in a position to have to take care of your anxiety for the fact that they just shared that with you. I mean, that goes for a lot of things in relationships, but particularly in that situation. But having just somebody there to listen, oh my God, like, guys, seriously, it goes such a long way. People commit suicide in isolation, whether perceived or otherwise. So if you can kind of create this pocket, create this connection with a person, be proximal to them emotionally or otherwise, it makes a huge difference. But you do not have to do more than that. You are not a trained professional. I just can't emphasize that enough. Not sure if you saw it. Sorry. No, it's okay to ask again, said Adorable. Is it okay to ask people about using suicide as a threat to manipulate somebody else? Okay. Using suicide as manipulation is never okay. The reason that that often works, when people do it, often, also it's rare when people do this. When people do it, they do it because you have to take suicide seriously. We take suicide seriously. So if a person learns that they can manipulate through using suicidal ideation, then sometimes people will do that. You can usually sniff that out pretty well because it seems like there's an ulterior motive besides just a huge sense of hopelessness. And it's just one of those things, like, it's not okay. You have to exercise boundaries in that moment. You always say, hey, call 911 or go to the emergency room if you're experiencing this ideation. I appreciate that you can tell me about it. But if you need to set boundaries that are that firm with a person who you believe is using it as a manipulative tool, then do so. I have a question about self-harming. What is your response to that and how to help somebody with that? Self-harm is a maladaptive coping mechanism. Self-harm is something that needs professional help. There is very little that a person who is not a professional can do to help somebody who is harming themselves because all of the complexity of that is beyond what I would ever expect the layman, if you will, to know how to handle, Oaken. So if you know somebody who is self-harming, encouraging that person to get professional help and setting your own personal boundaries is very important. Someone in the past told a professional about the serious eating disorder I was dealing with. The professional got me help. I'm thankful that they saw that they could help themselves and did that. It's awesome, blushing. Okay. But I don't want to go too far down the road of suicide as manipulation because that doesn't happen as often as people worry about. How do you find a psychiatrist who's willing to work successfully manages bipolar 2 mood swings with cannabis? It's not quite in my wheelhouse, Soxley, especially the cannabis part of it. If you have a therapist, they might be able to give you a referral to a psychiatrist or your general practitioner. All right, so just to kind of sum up my thoughts, because I know I went in a lot of different directions with this. First of all, I really appreciate that so many of you are here having the conversation with me. It is immensely sad when you see that somebody has ended their life. It's important not to make it about the living in some ways in those moments. Sometimes people get so wrapped up in the impact it has on the people who are still alive that they forget the reasons why the person who died killed themselves. I think it's really important to pay attention to that. Here's the other thing. All the nice things, if you take anybody in your life, you know how like after people die or after they kill themselves, all of a sudden people come out and start saying really nice things about how much they love a person and how much they mattered to them and about how appreciative they are for that fact that that person existed. Do that while people are alive. Like if you got somebody in your life who you really appreciate, tell them that. If you have, you know, streamers, people in the community, friends, family, whoever the hell, teachers, tell them that they matter to you while they're alive. You have no idea how much of a difference that can make for somebody. Don't wait until somebody kills themselves to now come out and say, oh man, but you know, I really loved you and I have so much love for you and you meant so much to me. Tell them now. Okay. I'm not kidding. That's like, it really is. It makes a huge difference in your life if you start sharing the appreciation you have for others. Do it for yourself and do it for them. But that's one of the things I always hate to see is how, not that people don't do that while people are alive. Don't get me wrong. But it's like, it's so hard when somebody kills themselves or when you see these things happen where people just say, oh, there's this outpouring of like wonderfulness that happens on this collective front where it's like, man, where was this? Like, where was this? When the person was articulating that they're struggling. And I'm not just talking about Wreckful here. I'm talking about anybody who's in that position, no matter how big or small their following or how big or small their presence. I mean, I'm not just talking about streamers here. I'd like to ask your opinion about some of the statements made recently stating that streamers should have QPR training and have the ability to de-escalate someone they may come to their channel with harmful thoughts. It's not the first time the topic has come up in this space. So I don't think it's a bad idea, Kilroy, but I do think that it puts, first of all, I would need to know who's doing the training because that's super important. The second thing is, you're right, streamers are not mental health professionals. That's part of the reason I created this channel. I am. One of the things that I've tried, like the message I've tried to spread is like, if you're a streamer, if any of you in here stream or you know a streamer that has people that pop in with mental health stuff, send them my way. Like I'm here. I know how to respond to that kind of stuff. Like it's part of why I do this. Not that I can't do therapy, but like if streamers need help kind of knowing how to navigate something, my DMs are always open to consult with how to handle that kind of stuff, always. In terms of like crisis intervention training, like I do think it can be a helpful thing for a streamer to have, but ultimately when streamers say something like, hey, you really need to call a hotline or you need to talk to a therapist, that is often a streamer staying in their lane. And when streamers get shit for that, it really bums me out because it's like, that's all they can do. So while I think it's important, I don't think it's necessary. I think it's important for streamers to know who they can send that person in the direction of, whether it's me, whether it's being able to talk about what the hotline offers, etc. It's not about them having to somehow be some kind of mental health professional. So those are kind of my thoughts on it. I hope that kind of touches on what you're asking because it's an important question, but it's okay to set boundaries. Streamers don't have to deal with that. I mean, people come to them with it, but knowing where to send people is really important. That's why I'm trying to get myself out there. One of the reasons I started this. What about the conquest in which this happens? What are some of the having a lot of social interactions placed on Twitch? Do you think there's a part of that can be dangerous? Should we be careful with? I'm not entirely sure what you're asking, Mars. Can you rephrase that for me? Golden King, you're going to have to have you tagged me? You're going to have to tag me, man. If his chat's moving really fast right now. I contacted Mental Health First Aid Organization to ask when they will have the course available online. Cool. Cool. Oh, there we go. Thank you, Victoria. My dad almost witnessed suicide a couple weeks ago. He works in a jail and someone tried to end his life. My dad came home and went to his room and didn't let everyone in for hours and just cried. I could see how that would happen. It's a very distressing thing to watch. Again, you can call hotlines for more than just suicidal ideation as well to process it and talk about it. But making a human being talk about what's going on for them, it's not always possible. I can't comment specifically on that, Golden King, because I'd have to do like an assessment. I can't do that on stream. But yeah, I tell you. What happens in some of these parasocial relationships, like Twitch, is people get attached to the people they watch, understandably so. Like, for so many of you, I know that this stream has become part of, like, a daily routine, or at the very least a weekly routine. And it's very easy to feel a sense of connection to a streamer and want to talk to them about what's going on. In my case, I'm fine with that because I know how to hold space for that in an ethical way. I spent a lot of time figuring out how to do that. Other streamers don't know how to do that, and I don't blame them for that. If it's a streamer who's there because they want to play Call of Duty, that's what they're there for. All right. So if that streamer says, "Hey, I can't help you, man. Call 911 or call the hotline." They're not being dismissive. They're staying within their lane. And I have a great amount of respect for people who do that. So just if there's anything listen, if people talk to you about this, actually pay attention to what they're saying. Validate their experience rather than tell them they don't want to do it or start talking about all the reasons why what they have to live for. Okay. Listen to what's going on. Refer them to a hotline and explain to them that they're going to talk to somebody who's actually trained and actually cares about them, not just because they're like they actually care. Okay. And tell people how you feel about them, particularly if it's appreciative now rather than afterwards. So I am always open to talking about this stuff on chat when we're streaming, okay? So if you ever have questions about suicide, if you ever have questions about what it's like to call the hotline, what the hotline's like, my experiences on the hotline, et cetera, you are always welcome to ask. You do not have to be afraid to talk about this stuff in this community. This is the type of community that can sustain those types of conversations, okay? I never want you guys to hold back from having to talk about this stuff, even if we're gaming, right? Like, I mean, when I'm chatting, when me and Jared are chatting with you guys and we're playing games and stuff, I'm here to talk about mental health. The gaming is just background fodder, you know, like having friends and laughs and stuff is really great. Like, I'm super pumped that Jared and Joe are here tonight. We're going to play Destiny and we're going to have fun and we're going to laugh, but we're going to talk about this stuff too. And I will keep talking about this stuff. I already gave Joe and Jared a heads up that we were probably going to end up talking about this stuff tonight. And they know that. And so I'm that's what I'm here for. And it's why I do this. So if you ever feel compelled to tell another streamer you know about me, not because I'm trying to steal their viewership. That's not what I'm out here for. I'm out here to try to be a resource for people, both viewers and fellow streamers. So fellow streamers, if you're out there and you're asking yourself, where are the professionals on Twitch? Who can I send my people to? I'm your guy. I will help. You can talk to me in DMs. I will listen to what you have to say. I will even consult with you about how you can handle people in your community or how you can have a really good mental health conversation that's within your bounds. So if you're watching this and you're a fellow streamer and you've always wondered this, come find me. Or if this gets clipped and you're watching this, come find me. I will help. That's what I'm here for. Is there a danger to that? Is there something we should be careful with when socializing and making connections online? No, I mean, no, Mars, that's human connection. That's human relationship. SHD equipment activated. And I think we have deep relationships online with people. Like, online relationships have gotten so much closer to in-person relationships at this point. And it is going to hit hard. it's not going to necessarily be buffed out just because it's an online relationship. And yeah, I would handle it like a person would handle any other thing. It's okay to talk about. Is it normal to have thoughts about what it's like to die or what it looks like? Yes, it is normal. It is common, Golden King. Whether people are healthy or not, those types of thoughts, whether they're curiosity-based or whatever, can pop into somebody's head. Some people think they're intrusive. Some people don't. But it, yes, if you ever have that, it's okay. If it's distressing enough that you need to talk about it and you have friends you trust, do that. If you need to call the hotline, call it. Seriously, you don't have to be in dire straits to call the hotline. I know I sound like kind of like firm and terse when I say that, but I just am so passionate about that. The amount of times that people would have fleeting ideation and they'd talk to me on the phone and I'd talk to them for like 20 minutes to 45 minutes and just listen to what they have to say, and they would end the call and go, oh my God, thank you so much. I just needed somebody to listen and not give me a response and try to fix it. Thank you so much for listening. I can't even count it. Can't even count it. Human connection goes so far for people. What's the best way to contact you in regard to collaboration? You can either email me at dr.mick.stream@gmail.com, or you can DM me on Discord, worst enemy. Flanagan, thank you for the sub. I appreciate it. Yeah, see, that kind of people have those types of thoughts all the time, Golden King. So, I appreciate you guys letting me talk about that. I think it's one of those things that's really important. And we'll talk about it. I hope we never have to talk about it again with something happening in the community like that. But if things happen, I will talk about it. It was really unfortunate that I had to cancel yesterday. But here we are. So if y'all wanted to know my thoughts on it, those are my thoughts. Jared, do you have anything you want to add on top of everything I said? I want to give you a chance to say something if you had anything you wanted to add.
I think it's probably good that we sound like broken records here, but it is really important to remember that you're not a professional. Because you want to help the person, and helping them is listening. That is how you help someone. But you are not someone who should be doing an assessment. And I think that's a really important distinction to remember. Because you care about that person, or because you just, you know, care about human life, you might feel compelled to be pushed in a direction where you're like, oh, well, I absolutely have to do something. This is my job. I have to do it. You have to get back to a place of remembering that you're not trained to do this. This isn't something that you deal, with every day on like a professional capacity. So you just have to know what your lane is, essentially. And then the other thing that I think you have said, but I want to say it in kind of a different way, is you don't want to guilt the person who is experiencing suicidal ideation, or even if they've moved further down into planning or whatever. You don't want to make them feel guilty about their decision. And so that's something you want to keep in the back of your mind, because I think there are things that you can say sometimes that you might think are coming from a caring place, and they are, but the way that you phrase it can make it seem almost like, now I feel guilty for even bringing this up, or now I feel guilty for the fact that my brain has even brought me to this place of thought. And so you just want to listen. I know it sounds to some people oversimplistic, and I know to some people it sounds like not enough, but listening goes such a long way. And reaching out, I guess that's also important. I don't know if we've touched on that. I've said it in regards to other things, but it's important to reach out and to not hound, I guess is the best way to put it. If you know somebody is struggling, just letting them know that you're there and for them. If they don't respond to you, it's very, very, very possible that they are just taking time to process, and you need to give them that space at times. Obviously, if you have more information where they've said something, where something is like more immediate, and you feel like, okay, well then yes, I do need to call like a crisis service, something like that, then that's different. But if it's just reaching out and you don't get a response for a couple hours, I mean, a lot of people are very depressed, so they're sleeping. They might just be asleep. That might be why you're not getting a response. So that kind of folds into also not making your anxiety, their anxiety. But you touched on pretty much everything. I just wanted to reiterate the whole professional part and the not guilt part.
I appreciate you saying that, dude. To echo it even further, like, that's one of the things I've been seeing a lot on social media is people basically saying, like, what more could I have done? I mean, it's not even just in relation to the specific person, but, like, and it's just, like, it's okay that you guys are not professionals. I know there are some in here. I know there are some professionals in chat. But if you are not a professional, that's okay. I don't give legal advice. Because I'm not a lawyer. If I have a person that comes to me and says, hey, Dr. Mick, I got this really complicated contract and I don't know how to go forward with it. Help me out. I'm not going to try to fake my way through that. I'm not going to try to give legal advice. I don't have that kind of expertise. I don't have that education. There's a reason I had to, you know, do 40 hours worth of training to be a volunteer and then 9 years worth of school to be able to do what I do. And again, like, it always sounds like I'm not saying that as like this humble brag on look at all the training I have. It's to emphasize the point that like talking about this stuff is incredibly complicated. And it's, and that's why I'm always weary of anybody who tries to oversimplify this shit, because it isn't that. It's like it's very complex. The human nature is complex. Human relationships are complex. So know your limitations. It is. I mean, God, if that's not a. That should be part of the motto at this point. No matter your experiences are valid, don't let anybody ever tell you otherwise, and know your limitations. So. For young viewers, okay, well, that's actually a good point, Chico. So there are often, there are some teen crisis lines in certain areas. There was a teen crisis line when I worked at the crisis center I was on, but if an underage friend is talking about suicide to another underage friend, telling you gotta either encourage them to call, you can call the hotline if you're under 18. Just so you know, you call the hotline if you're under 18. But parental involvement or guardian involvement or some adult involvement is important. And sometimes if it means sacrificing your friendship in the short term because you had to get adults involved, you got to do it. So I'm going to switch to Destiny here in a second, Victoria. I should have done that at the beginning, but I think it's probably too late now. Well, I just want to say, in the spirit of what I said earlier, I really appreciate all of you. I really mean that. I wish I could go through and just go by name and tell you all individually how much I appreciate you and that you're here and that whatever the extent of the distress you have in your life right now, I'm glad you're still here. I'm glad you're still fighting through it, no matter how painful it might be. I'm glad that you make the time to come hang out with us and hang out with each other. I know for a fact that this community has had a hugely positive impact on a lot of people's lives. That is not just because of me. It's not just because of Jared. It's not just because of Joe and Sean and all the other people that come and hang out here. It's because of you guys. And I appreciate every single one of you. And I'm really glad you're here. And these are conversations that we will have for as long as I do this. And I have no problem having these conversations. I'm not scared of it. I really, really, really hope that all of you will continue to feel welcome here. And I'm really grateful for this community and for what you guys have. And if you're ever struggling, that's what support chat is for in the Discord. I'm here to listen. And you guys are awesome. And I know this is a hard topic, so thanks for hanging in there if this is a hard topic. I think, honestly, talking about suicide is important. Not talking about it is what further silos people who are experiencing suicidal ideation. The more we talk about it, the more comfortable people get with it, the less scary it is for people to share what's going on for them. So it's okay to talk about suicide. we should talk about suicide, and people who are comfortable talking about suicide should talk about it. And that's why I'm doing that tonight. That's why I wanted to make sure that I spent as much time. I know we just spent an hour talking about it, but it's important to talk about.